Okay, we now begin Maseches Bava Kama in earnest. This is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph 1:1. And in the introduction, I sort of gave an overview to the whole Seder and the structure of the Masechta, but let me here now give an introduction really to the next six prakim, next six chapters of the Masechta, which deal with Nizke Mamon, which is the topic of when one's property causes damage to another, whether it's his property or his person, for that matter. So if you would go through the psukim carefully in Mishpatim, you would find six different instances, six different categories where you have people causing damage to someone else's property. Okay, I'm going to go through those six now. The first is a person himself. If a person causes damage, the Adam Hamazik, then he's certainly liable, and the rule is that the person is mu'ad la'olam, he's always responsible to pay full restitution if he causes damage, even if he was, it was an accident, it doesn't matter. When a person causes damage to another person's property, that could be directly begufa with his own person, like, I take my hand and I break your flower pot by knocking it over. It also could be through his force, but not directly with his person. That's called chitzo, his arrow. So if I shoot an arrow and it goes and breaks your window, or if I take a ball and I throw it and it goes through your window and breaks it, so then I'm responsible to pay for the damages of the broken window. There's a third category called grama, which is like essentially indirect causation. And there, if the exact parameters of what defines indirect has to be explored, but the principle is once it's considered to be indirect as opposed to just an extension of my strength or my direct action, so then at least bide adam down here, there's no obligation to make restitution, to pay for the damages. It's considered indirect. Maybe lifnei mishur hadin, above and beyond the letter of the law, I would have to compensate you. So that's the first category, Adam Hamazik, a person. Then you have what the Chazal refer to as shor. Shor means an ox, or an ox referring to livestock. So oxen, like all livestock, really can damage in three different ways. So the first one was Adam Hamazik, a person causing damage to property. The next three are caused by one's animals, potentially, and those three are keren, shein, and regel. Keren, which literally means a horn, is referring to when an animal intends to inflict damage. So, while that could be with its horn, like by goring, it also could be with its foot by kicking and the like. Okay, its teeth by biting and so on. So when an animal intends to do damage, so then that's called keren, and the rule generally is that one has to pay for that, but if the animal is considered a tam, meaning a docile animal, and therefore not expected to start goring people, so then the rule is that one only pays chati nezek, half the damages. Okay? If the animal is a mu'ad, if he's established to be dangerous, that would mean, let's say, for example, if it's a cow, it's gored three times already, if you have a pet lion, so then even the first time, of course, lions are known to be dangerous in the beginning, so then you'd pay full damages right away, okay? Then you have shein, which literally means tooth, refers to the category of damage where your livestock is benefiting itself, most commonly by eating. Sheep go and graze in if your sheep graze in your neighbor's field and eat his stuff, so then that's called shein, and you have to compensate him for the damage that your sheep caused. But again, it's not about eating necessarily. If your pet cow has an itch on its back and scratches it against your neighbor's wall and knocks the wall over, so again, that's called shein because it was for the benefit of the cow, not Karen. It didn't intend to damage the wall. It wanted to take care of its own needs and therefore did so. So that's called shein. And then you have regel. Regel, which literally means foot, is referring to the normal actions that animals do as they go about doing their animal business, and there's just collateral damage that comes from that. When the most typical thing is when they walk around, they trample on things. So if I let my animals walk through your backyard, even if they're muzzled, but they're going to trample your petunias, that's called regel. They'll, by a matter of course, trample on things, and I have to compensate you for the damage I caused by them doing their business. But it's not just about regel. If I bring about regular per se, about feet or trampling, if I bring my bull into your china shop, so it's predictable that the bull walking around as a well-behaved bull does still would knock over the china, and that would be considered a regel, even though it's knocking off with the rest of its body. And again, you have to make full restitution for the animal causing damage to the regel. There is an interesting halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, which says that if the animal causes damage through its regular activities, doing its animal thing, but it does so not directly, but rather indirectly, meaning through its koach, so then kind of analogous to what I said, if a person damages through chitzo, through like an arrow, so if an animal damages through what's called sororos, literally pebbles, so the animal's walking along the way doing its thing, as it's allowed to do, but then it kicks up a rock, and the rock causes damage. So that's called sroos, and halacha Moshe Sinai says there's only a chatzi nezek, meaning that only half the damage is caused, only half of the damage caused is paid for by the owner of the animal. Okay, so those three collectively called shor, the damages caused by one's animals, again broken up into keren, shein, and regel, are part of a person's property that damages, and those are, we bring us up to now a total of four, but there are two more. There's also eish, which means a fire, so that means literally means, of course, fire, like if one lights a fire in his backyard but then the wind blows it to his neighbor's backyard and causes damage there, so then he'd be liable as well. But conceptually, eish is referring to any thing from my property which causes damage through an intermediary, meaning the fire alone is not my fire, we're just in my backyard. What made it damage your stuff is the wind carrying it. So there's a necessary intermediary which causes, you know, has to be added to my fire to cause damage to you. It's nothing to do with, you know, fire per se or wind per se, but example, if I would, you know, put my knife on the edge of my balcony and the wind would blow it off and it would fall down off my balcony and, you know, land on your pet, so then the damage that my knife calls your pet would be called eish, because it's the knife which I left but which is carried by an intermediary of wind and damages your dog. Again, that's I'd be liable there, and in all cases if I didn't act responsibly. The general rule is, like I mentioned before, it's all about taking responsibility, and therefore the basic rule of thumb will be if the owner acts responsibly, he will be exempt. If he acted irresponsibly, meaning it's anticipatable that regular wind will blow, and if regular wind could blow this knife off the balcony, or spread the fire, etc., then one would be liable. The sixth instance of causing damage to someone's property in the Torah is what's called bor. Bor means pit. The idea is if a person creates a hazard in the public domain, and then, you know, Mr. A digs a pit, or for that matter, you know, leaves a thumbtack or a screw in the parking lot or something, and then Mr. B gets damaged by it, you know, his animal falls into the pit or whatever it is, you know, his car drives over the thumbtack, so then that's called bor, and the person who left it behind is responsible. So there, those are those six categories of that are explicit in Psukim, all in Mishpatim, that talk about how a person could damage his fellow's property. Now, our Mishnah begins by saying arba avos nezikin. There are four categories of nezikin. It's actually an interesting grammatical construct, the word nezikin. So the Rosh says the reason why this word is because our Tana is what's called the Yerushalmi. He's from Jerusalem. His language is a little different than other parts of the nation. And the same way, sort of like one who does chesed is called a chassid. One who does nezek is called a nazik. That's the Rosh explains here, what's going on grammatically here. And when it says avos, what it means is there are four categories of causing damage on the property. That means avos clues you in, implicit they're not just the general categories, but also tolados, which are subcategories, which are basically the same principle at work in a different guise. The same way we have avos and tolados in Tumah and Tahara, we have avos and tolados in Hilchos Shabbos. So we have avos and toldos when it comes to nezikin. And the same way in Hilchos Shabbos, let's say one of the lamatas malachos, 39 categories, one of the avos is zoreya, planting seeds. So that's, you can't plant a seed, that's the av. But if you do anything to facilitate plant growth, like watering seeds, that would be a tolda of the av. And similarly over here, like I said before, you know, keren might be one of the avos, but it's not about horns, though a toldo would be if he uses his foot or its teeth and the like. Now, the reason why they're considered avos is because they're explicit in the verses. That's what makes them an av. And Now, if you say, wait a second, I hold, gave a whole introduction saying there are six different instances in the Pesukim, and now the Mishnah says there are just four. What's going on? So there, the Gemara gets pretty complicated pretty fast because there are two basic approaches to read the next four words of our Mishnah, meaning the four avos. According to Rav, the Amora, who argues with Shmuel, all six of what I mentioned before are included in the next four words, the four avos. According to Shmuel, no, just four of them are. Four of the six are mentioned in our Mishnah, and two of the six are not being mentioned in the Mishnah for whatever reasons. The Bar Tanura learns like Shmuel, explaining that the four avos here are just four of the six, and I really will stick to that. So, but I'll sort of just give a brief taste of how Rav is reading this Mishnah as well. So, let me do that right now. The four avos nezikin are, says the Mishnah, Hashur, Vahabor, Vahamav'eh, Vahev'er. Now, shor, which means, like I said before, the ox, or the bull, something like that. So, according to Rav, that includes all three of those things that I refer to as shor, meaning Karen, Shane, and Regel. So that one word covers three of the six, and the other three words will cover the other three of the six. That's how it's going to work out for Rav. According to Shmuel, no. Shor only refers to the kind of the subcategory, I'll call it, known as regel. So shor means livestock doing their thing, damaging as they do what they do, walking around and trampling and that kind of thing, knocking things over. That's what shor refers to. And says Shmuel, the reason why it doesn't say regel explicitly is because if it said regel, you'd think it means, you know, any damage it does with its foot. And kicking, when I say the cow damaged my stuff with its foot, so you would think that means kicking. And kicking would not actually be considered a regel. Kicking would be a tolda of Shane. Excuse me, of Karen. Because Karen is the animal intending to damage, and kicking is that. And therefore, says Shmuel, it says shor, to talk about animals in general, doing their animal thing. And it's referring specifically to regel, damage that's caused as the animal goes about doing its thing. Now, when will one be liable for... I'm going to say now everything according to Shmuel, essentially, like the Bar Tanura. So when would one be responsible for shor, meaning for regel? That's when your animal is in a place where it doesn't belong, i.e. in your neighbor's property, as opposed to in your property, or even the Rosh Hashanah, in public property. Your animal's allowed to be there in the public property, and if it's walking around in public property and it knocks over something in the street, well, everyone who's in the street has to be careful because your animals have a right to be there. Okay? The basis for shor, meaning regel, is really the same basis for shane, tooth, which we'll come up to momentarily, which is the pasuk in Shmos, perk chav beis, pasuk dalad, 22:4, which is in Mishpatim, which is a little tricky to read. I'll read it to you now and explain it so you have it. To understand this pasuk, you have to understand that the word be'ir means an animal, livestock, in general. It's a noun. But the pasuk here has like a cognate of that and turns the word be'ir, animal, into like a verb, like doing its animal thing. So the pasuk says, ki yav'er ish sadeh, Ocherem, if a person is letting his animals do their animal thing in a field or a vineyard, and then either A, Vishilach es Be'iro, he sends his animal, or B, Uvier Beste Acher, or B, the animal grazes, does his animal thing, but here Be'er means graze, in another's field. It's not sade acher, another field, but rather ste acher, another person's field. So either A, vishilach es be'iro, he sends the animal, that's regel, the animal has been sent and it's damaging as it goes, or uvier beste acher, or graze in someone else's field, that's shane, it's getting benefit for itself by grazing and eating. Then the rule is, metav sadehu, or metav karmo yishalem, the owner of the animal that causes damage has to pay, and if he's paying with making restitution with his property, he has to pay from the best of his property, whether it's his field or vineyard. So that's really the psukim, why they're called avos, for both shane and regel. Okay, the second of the avos nezikin is vahabor, the pit. The pasuk here says, this is in Shmos Chaf Aleph, pasuk Lam Gimel Lam Adalid, 21, 33, and 34. V'chi yiftach ish bor, if a person uncovers a pit, oki yichre ish bor, or if a person digs a pit, and the chiddush is even, you would say, perhaps, if you're liable for uncovering, all the more so if you dug it yourself. So the Gemara says, well, yes, but the person does the digging and makes the bore, let's say, from 9 to 10 tefachim deep, making it a lethal pit, which could kill someone. It's the latter person who did the digging who's responsible. That's the actual limud there. V'lo yichasenu, says the pasuk, and then he doesn't cover it up, because the whole operative principle here is a person has to act responsibly. So a person could cover the pit, in which case he wouldn't be responsible, because that's the proper course of action, assuming the cover is, you know, appropriate cover. But if he didn't do that, so then v'nafal shama shor or chamor, if into that pit falls a shor, a cow, or a chamor, a donkey, so then bal habor yishalem, then the owner of the pit will have to make payment to the person who owned the ox or donkey. Now, interesting, it's called Bal Habor, the owner of the pit, when the truth is that if there's just a public thoroughfare, it's Rosh Hashanah, no one owns it. And then if I dig a hole in it, still no one owns it, it's just a hole in the public. But the Torah is ascribing ownership and responsibility to me who dug the hole, so it becomes like my hole, if you will, even though it's in the public. And the pasuk says, Shor O Chamor, which seems a little redundant. Could have just used one example. Why does it say both ox and donkey? So the answer is like this. So in Hilchos Shabbos, elsewhere it says, in terms of Shvisas Behemta, when you have to make sure your animal don't do labor on Shabbos, it refers to the shor and chamor resting, and elsewhere it talks about behem in general resting. Therefore we learn in Hilchos Shabbos domain, the psukim talking about shor and chamor means any animal. So to over here, any animal, meaning even your camel or whatever it is, if it falls inside the pit, the person who made the pit is responsible. So then why does it give both examples, shor and chamor? So the Gemara dashes out, shor velo adam, meaning if what falls in the pit is a person's cow and the cow dies, because it's a lethal pit, because it's more than 10 tefachim deep, so then the person who dug it has to make restitution for the dead cow. But if it's a person who fell in, God forbid, and he dies, so then a person who dug the pit will not be responsible, at least not by the earthly courts, for digging that pit. The general principle is, you know, the person who fell in should watch where he's going. In any case, the point is, the psukim say that the drush is that you're not liable for the death of another person. If it comes to injury, you would be liable, meaning if the cow or the person fell in the pit and twisted its or his ankle, so then the person who dug the pit would be liable, both for the cow twisted ankle and the person's twisted ankle. And chamor tells you chamor v'lo kelim, it's the donkey for which you're responsible if it gets hurt, but not any like other utensils that fill in. So for example, if on the donkey's back there's a flower pot, so then, and the donkey falls in and it breaks its ankle and the flower pot falls in and it gets smashed also, so then the person dug the pit has to pay for the damaged donkey but not for the broken flower pot. Okay, and the pasuk ends by saying, Balabor Yishalem, the owner of the pit has to pay. Kesef Yashiv Leva'alav, Vahamesi Yelo. Kesef means he has to pay with money, but Yashiv is an extra word. Like he will repay, make restitution, Leva'alav, to the owner of whatever fell in the pit. The extra word Yashiv tells you it can be money, like cash, or it can be something else. Shava Kesef, something else, any other, you know, movable objects. I can pay him in, you know, in bottles of wine or something. Vahamesi Yelo, and the corpse, the carcass will belong to him in this pasuk, bottom line, lalacha means to the original owner. So the idea is, if the original donkey was worth 100, it fell in the pit, now it's not useful anymore to work, it has to be used, you know, I don't know what, to go to the glue factory, so it used to be worth 100, and now it's worth 40, so then the person who dug the pit would have to pay 60. And if the fellow doesn't take the original owner of the donkey, doesn't get his donkey out of the pit fast enough before it, you know, decomposes to the point that the glue factory doesn't want it anymore, so the glue factory says it's worth zero, so then still, the digger of the pit only pays a total of 60. The rest of the damage, the loss, is shouldered by the original owner, because it's his responsibility to reclaim the full and injured donkey. Okay, so that's the habor. Then you have hamav'eh. Now, mav'eh, another really ambiguous term. The way that the Shmuel learns it, and that's the bartender explains it. Mav'eh is a reference to Shane. Mav'eh, according to Shmuel, is a reference in which becomes uncovered. He learns it out based on a pasuk that's in Ovadia, which refers to hidden things being uncovered. Pasuk says, Niv'u Matzpunav. That's a pasuk in Ovadia, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav. And that means something like Matzpunav, things that are hidden, like Tzafun from the Pesach Seder, Tzafun hidden away. Niv'u becomes uncovered or exposed, which says Shmuel is a reference to the teeth of the animal doing the grazing that are usually hidden behind the lips, but become exposed and appear when the animal's feeding. So that's what Mav'eh means. Yes, it's a rather oblique reference to teeth, Shane, but that's where he learned it. According to Rav, who already had Shane included as part of Shur, so he says Mav'eh is a reference to a person. That's the Adam Amazik, a person causing damage. And he understands it from a different pasuk, a pasuk in Yeshaya, that a person could be referred to as Mav'eh, because like the from the root, like boy, the Gemara asks like boy Rav Yirmiyah or e boy lahu, which means like to ask or request or need or want, inquire. And I guess Rav understands that's sort of the essential nature of a person. What defines a person as a person is that he is, wanting things and of Hashem. Okay, fine. So that's the Mav'eh, which means how we'll learn it like Shmuel, a reference to Shane. And finally, Shane again, meaning the animal benefiting itself. And then that same halachas as a regal, essentially. It means if it grazed in his steacher, someone else's field. And then finally, ha-hev-er. Hev-er, a reference to fire. Again, although the pasuk we read before, be-er, was referring to animals. Here, hev-er, like the sne-bo-er, the burning bush that Moshe Rabbeinu saw, was bo'er, it was burning. That's, mav'ir, the malach on Shabbos, to kindle a flame. So here, hev'er, like the fire that burns. That's eish, as the pasuk says, ki seitzi eish, when a fire goes out. See, it's going out by itself. So the man doesn't do it. Some other, like the wind makes it spread. Umatza kolzim, v'nechol gadish, o akama, o asadeh. And then the fire spreads, and it damages, consuming someone's haystack or his standing grain that hasn't been harvested, or the field itself damaging the ground, so it has to be, say, replowed or something. Shalem yishalem hamavir es habeira. The person who kindled the flame is going to have to make restitution. So that's Eish. So those are the four categories of Avos, whether, according to Shmuel, it's just four of the six, and those what's common to those four is those are the four where it's a person's property causing damage as opposed to his person, and the payment for the damage is a full Nezek Shalom, a full payment. Meaning, according to Shmuel, there's no mention of Adam Mazik here, because that's people causing damage to properties different than animals and other property. And it doesn't mention Keren, because Keren, if you recall, when it comes to livestock, is normally considered to be Chatzi Nezek. Usually it's you pay half payments, because it's not normal for livestock to intend to cause damage. They're docile animals, so they're not included here. Now, the next part of the Mishnah is answering the following implicit question, which is, why do we have to have four different categories? Can we learn, if we have some, can't we learn others, like from a kind of kol v'chomer? So the Mishnah says, no, you can't. Lo harei hashor karei hamaveh. V'lo harei hamaveh karei hashor. The shor, we'll call that regel, is not really comparable to maveh, we'll call that shane. And lo harei maveh, the shane, is not really comparable to regel. Why? Because what's going on here is that we're talking about a person being responsible for his property. And there are two different reasons why you should be responsible for your livestock. One is Shane and one is Regel. The idea is that you might say, listen, it's for if the Torah told you you're responsible for Regel, that's because Regel is happening, it's a matzo, it's happening all the time. When every animals go somewhere, that they cause damage. You have to watch them 24/7 wherever they're going because they trample things and knock things over. In contrast, they're not always eating, etc. So you might think you'd be exempt from the eating if you only knew about the regel part of it. On the flip side, if you knew about the shein, you said, listen, if your animal feeds someone else's property, then you're liable to make restitution, but not for trampling. You'd think, listen, yeah, because that's animal getting benefit. It's got, you have to watch your animal carefully because animals want to eat, whereas just animals doing its thing, maybe you think you're exempt for an animal doing its thing. Therefore, you need to have both. The psukim. Furthermore, v'lo zeh v'zeh, sheyesh ben ruachaim, if you only had these two things, Meaning if you only had Shin and Regel, you wouldn't necessarily be able to learn out more because those are alive. So of course you have lots of responsibility because they're running around doing their thing. They have wills of their own, so to speak. They go around. They're not Kareh HaEsh. They're not comparable to fire because fire doesn't spread without some intermediate like a wind pushing it around. In and of itself, it's not alive. It doesn't have a will. She'en bo ruachayim. And velo zeh vezeh, even all three together, meaning Shein, Regel, and Eish, wouldn't be enough to tell you Bor. Shadark and Leilech Lahazik, because those things at least are on the move. Therefore, of course, if you're mindful of your animals which are running around and your fire which can spread, they're not Karei HaBor, they're not comparable to a pit, as some sort of obstacle in the ground which stays put. Shein Darku Leilech Lahazik, because the Bor, the hazard on the ground, doesn't move around. So therefore, says the Mishnah, Hatzat HaShava Shebehen, the common denominator, which defines all these things. So you can take away a message here, which is important, because in all of Mishpatim are principles to be applied, not just chukim, not just arbitrary rules that can't be extrapolated from, is Shedark and Lahazik. It's the way of these things to cause damage. If you're not careful, your animal, your fire, and your pit will all cause damage to your neighbor's property. And therefore, Ushmirasan Alecha, it's your responsibility to guard them. Again, like I said from the beginning, the center piece, the underlying principle which governs the just society is people take responsibility for themselves and their property. So you have Shmiras and Alecha, you're responsible to make sure that your property doesn't cause damage. Ukashehizik, and if it does cause damage to your neighbor's property, Chav HaMazik L'Shalem Tashlumi Nezik B'Meitav Ha'aretz. It's the obligation of the Mazik, the one who caused the damage, meaning the owner of the property who didn't guard his property from causing damage sufficiently well. The word here, Chav, is quite a... It's not exactly usual as opposed to chayev. Again, this is a reflection of the version of Hebrew that was spoken in Yerushalayim, which was a little different. So chayev like chayev. The mazik is obligated. L'shalem tashlumin nezek, to make a payment of tashlumin. This word tashlumin, like tashlumin nezek, seems to be a superfluous word. It could have said you'd think the mazik could l'shalem nezek, to pay for the damage. But tashlumin nezek is to implicate the idea of hashlama, which is like... topping up, you know, to offset the difference. The point is, example I gave to you before, if I dig a pit and your donkey falls in and your donkey is worth 100 and now it's broken and only worth 40, so my payment to you is just the hashlama, just the missing 60 to bring it from 40 back to 100, the difference between how much it was worth before it fell in and how much it's worth immediately after it falls in. And same too about damages done with Shein, Regel, and Eish. As opposed to, let's say, you might have thought, listen, now that you've broken my donkey, you take the donkey and buy me a new one. No, that's not the case. I don't take the donkey and buy you a new one. I just compensate you for the decrease in value between before and after my stuff caused damage to your property. And b'meitav ha'aretz, with the best of his land, this reflects that pasuk I read to you before, that if a person is paying with property as opposed to with cash, so then he has to pay with the best of his property, best being the property which is most easily sold, meaning it's like the most productive. So if I have two pieces of land, both worth 100, and I cause 100 damage to you, I can't give the less desirable land, even though it's worth 100, because let's say it's bigger. No, I have to give the more easily sold piece of property to you. That's called idis in rabbinic parlance. Idis, the best of the property. And if I'm paying you with cash, however, or even with other metalton, other kinds of objects, like I'm paying you in, you know, sacks of flour or something, so then all kinds of cash is considered to be idis equally, because it's equally easy to transfer cash and resell it, and therefore there's an obligation to pay with the best of my flour. I can give you any flour worth the 100 that I owe you.